From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The story that came out tonight, as reported, is false.
That was U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster speaking at the White House Monday evening.
At no time were intelligence sources or methods discussed.
He was referring to a report published in the Washington Post that claimed President Trump revealed highly classified information to Russia.
And the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. And I was in the room. It didn't happen.
Scott Rickert is a former U.S. intelligence officer and linguist with a background in communications technology and national security. We spoke with him via Skype from Florida Tuesday. Scott, it's a pleasure to have you. I'm just amazed at the latest. I've been watching, you know, we've all been watching the, I don't know if it's a new phenomenon or certainly an intensification of one that's been an ongoing problem, but the media is of one voice against Trump like I have never seen. And this now, Trump is the Rosenbergs and, I don't know, Boris Badenov and everybody else rolled into one. Maybe you can give us your perspective. First, give people a little bit of your background. I know you have an intel background, a translator and other things, and you can tell people so they understand your perspective on this.
Well, I was lucky enough to grow up in the military. My father was he was a career colonel in the Army. He taught me a few things. I moved on at a young age into the intel community as an Arabic and a Korean linguist. And I was able to, work in a pretty exciting field and learn a lot of different things about, modern, intelligence, as well as really historical value on the actual events that occurred to get us to where we are today. And I think what happens is, with this kind of situation where the media is basically attacking another individual, they attacked Obama quite well. They attacked Clinton quite well. They attacked HW. They even attacked Ronald Reagan, as well as for sure they're going to attack George Bush Jr. So these are not uncommon times. Obviously, they work in unison when it comes to the media. The media has been hijacked for quite some time. It's been hijacked since the early 1900s. When you look at the work of Edward Bernays, the Untermeyer, Samuel Untermeyer, and his son, these guys took over the print industry. They've obviously migrated through the incredible escalation of communications when it comes to radio, television, now the internet, and along the way they've basically put together all kinds of individuals within different focus groups and networks, including the CIA when they did it with Operation Mockingbird. So when the movement comes in the media, it just consider it kind of like the weather. It's a storm coming through. It's going to go away. It's obviously not going to affect us long term in any event, for the individuals that are paying attention like you and I. But at the end of the day, what it does do is it sways public opinion. This public opinion is very easily swayed. That was the premise of Edward Bernays' book. He basically said, the book was called Propaganda, and he said, this is how you control societies. You use media to control societies. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing it live. We have, a better way to communicate around it now. Back in, the time when I was young, we couldn't even make phone calls like this across the country for less than $5 a minute. So, now we have the ability to talk. I was saying this before we got on the program, to talk to individuals around the world. I've met some incredible individuals like you and others through Russian television, through Iranian television, through Pakistani television. It's just amazing the individuals I've been able to meet in my own country that aren't getting any exposure through mainstream media in the United States, but yet, being starved for information as a society, we now have an outlet where people can provide information on an open basis, and they're doing everything they can to limit and or curtail our ability to spread it. You know, I don't know if you've seen any of the changes in technology, but the way that information is disseminated now on Facebook and Twitter and other platforms, Google is very controlled. You know, we saw that with the investigation with the DNC, with Podesta's emails and how they architected the search engines to support Hillary Clinton at Google. They paid Google a lot of money from the DNC to do this. This is what we're up against, is we're up against a massive amount of technology. We're up against individuals and focus groups who basically puppet string our politicians and our media to a degree that most people just can't even fathom.
Yeah, I remember over the course of the presidential election, Brian Becker at the Sputnik News Agency had interviewed an IT person about some of the things that, you know, they were measuring that Google had done to lift Hillary Clinton in the search, various search returns, and to associate Trump with, you know, bad things, quote unquote. You know, it was kind of amazing. It's not, once he explained it, of course, you know, it's clear that, oh, well, this is fairly simple to do. But how much power is in the hands of, you know, a very few decision makers at the control platforms like Google, and presumably the same with Zuckerberg at Facebook, or, you know, folks at Twitter. It's, you have a new architecture of communications where just about all communications, even people sitting in the same room now, because they're texting each other instead of speaking, they're mediated. Someone else is between you and the other person. And so first, every piece of equipment has an on-off switch. So if you want to just shut it down, you just hit that. And then you have these massively complex algorithms that can help, you know, the system itself can, you know, I put a picture of my wife in Facebook, for example, and it asked me if I wanted to tag her by name. There was nothing on it that identified her. It just recognized her face, saying, oh, that's his wife. You want to tag, you know, and then her name. So I'm assuming that the trillions of photographs that they've got in there of all of us, there's a machine there that has all of us held in its head and is ready to process on command whatever it's told to process. With that,
well, it's actually better than that. I mean, I come from a pretty high-tech background. Last company that I worked directly for was acquired by Israeli intelligence. It was doing scanning for viruses using rootkits and those types of things out on the internet. This WannaCry type of exploit uses those vulnerabilities in the operating systems to take advantage of the basically the open doors that the operating system companies leave to virus companies to run these kind of rootkits. And the NSA and these antivirus companies have worked together for years. The same thing goes with these algorithms. You know, when you look at the algorithms that were created for Facebook, for example, the guys at Visible Technologies, Sandia Laboratories, all these guys work together to basically analyze data. They've actually were caught by surprise when Facebook and Twitter were used to basically mobilize 10% of the Egyptian people. Now imagine that, 10% of society of 75 million in a protest. When it kind of got out of hand, there were about 50 quote-unquote NGOs, non-government organizations from America, sponsored by the American government, so I don't know how they can call them NGOs.
Right.
But these are the individuals who got behind a lot of social movements that basically exploded into what they described as the Arab Spring. And obviously, it got out of hand. They looked at it. They sent all the data back into Sandia Laboratories, analyzed it, and they said, okay, if this ever happens again, how do we control it? How do we basically minimize the impact or steer the conversation into our direction that we want to go? And they did. They wrote a new algorithm at Facebook called EdgeRank. And then EdgeRank was used as a commercial tool as well. So now that we want to communicate on our pages and our personal accounts, we have to pay for it through these sponsored links. And so it became very much like the television sponsorships or like the radio sponsorships. It's a communications network that is basically being morphed into what we're used to on radio and television, whereby if we want to broadcast on that network, we have to pay to play. And it was actually built through research at Sandia Laboratories with Facebook and companies like Visible Technologies, which is basically doing monitoring, reporting, and real-time activation of intelligence services through another commercial company that was created by the CIA through venture capital through a company called InQtel. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it's a venture capital company out of Washington, D.C., where a lot of the guys that are part of InQtel are part of a long history from even the 70s of the aerospace defense industry investing in the technology and obviously weapons industries. So this is something that doesn't come as a surprise to me. Unfortunately, like you said, the technology industry, there's only about 10% of our society that's actually getting the information on this technology side. Most people are still stuck to their TVs and stuck to their radios. You know, they're listening to their Rush Limbaughs or they're listening to their Rachel Maddows, and that's the majority of our society. There's not as many of us as we'd like on this new sort of medium, and they're already making major headway in manipulating it and steering it in the directions they want to see it go.
Yeah, I mean you had the mass media developing over a century or so, and massive study of it, focus groups, all of the things that Madison Avenue and Langley and everybody else did for decades and decades. So, going back, you cited some of the originals, and there were others that were notable, students of behavioral sciences.
Absolutely.
But, now what we're talking about is for people like my age. Maybe I would talk to my mom on the telephone for 30 minutes. Now you have a break-in like every 10 minutes with a commercial. And not only that, we say, yeah, Mom, and I really liked that chocolate cake you made last week. All of a sudden, we have to interrupt this for a word from our sponsor, Betty Crocker has, That's the kind of I have a friend who asked me about a particular microphone that they wanted to use. They're building a little radio studio. And so I said, geez, that reminds me sort of in terms of the application of this microphone. And I Googled the particular one to give them an idea of the price range today for this particular. It was an SM7 Shure microphone. Well, I have been getting ads on every platform now, Google, Facebook, Twitter, wherever, for SM7 microphones.
Sure.
The whole universe knows that I looked it up once.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. That's obviously part of the marketing and the tracking component, but certainly that's used more in a commercial sense. But think about how easily that's used
politics,
compared.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, compared to how they used to, track what books we checked out from a library.
Yeah, or photograph the outside of the envelopes for our mail or whatever, which is what they said they were doing. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know whether steam marks were on all my letters, but
that's funny you should say that. Yeah, I don't know. I found some interesting things when my grandfather passed away. I cleaned up his basement, and he was from World War II time frame, so he was quite the hoarder when it came to saving things. And I found some microfiche in his basement that what they did in the World War II is they photographed all the letters that were being sent overseas and vice versa, and they shipped them back and forth via microfiche. And if there was anything that was in the letter that identified any kind of intelligence, they would actually redact it by marking out with black a marker on the personal letters going back and forth between the military and their spouses and family back and forth. And that was interesting because a lot of the when the microfiche arrived in theater, wherever the letter was intended to go, they'd actually print out the letter on a 5x5 card, almost like a coaster. And that was how people communicated during the war. It was a very short period, but it obviously saved a ton of weight flying the communications, the personal communications back and forth between the soldiers and their families. But at the end of the day, it also provided a tremendous amount of intelligence for the intelligence community. There were people analyzing every single letter that went back and forth.
So let's, we're looking sort of at the machinery, and now let's look at the story that just got grinded through it. Washington Post. Trump revealed highly classified information to Russian diplomats. And the administration says no intelligence sources or methods were discussed. And then you have analysis under monkey cage. Where's the bananas? This is why Trump's loose tongue has compromised U.S. security. And they're going gaga. I haven't caught the commentators yet. You mentioned Rachel Maddow and what's his name? Rush Limbaugh. Dershowitz, I don't know which one is the evil twin out of that pair, can they both be the evil twins?
I think
twins?
They are related.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At least through the left wing Hezbollah network.
Yeah,
they're
definitely related. Oh, God. It's like. So, and here we go. The experts were right. Trump isn't fit to be president. These are headlines in the Washington Post. Trump is dangerously incompetent. The only realistic way to stop Trump, I haven't looked at that, but I know that in Foreign Policy and in New York Times, they've been using military coup and assassination, which used to be, I thought it was illegal to suggest that before, but now they print it. And then Russia denies classified details shared by Trump. About the facts here, first of all, that are alleged. And then I don't know, am I crazy or doesn't the president have the right to declassify things? I thought that it was the executive that decides that something is a secret in the first place.
Yeah, well, the Americans have been sharing information with the Russians, albeit limited because of the American involvement in the war in Syria alongside their allies, obviously Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Jordan, Israel. So the Americans have been covering up a lot of, criminal activity in Syria. But at the same time, because the Russians became involved, there was a lot of intelligence cooperation. And that cooperation obviously came to a halt when the Russians were being misled, and obviously the Russians were just being betrayed left and right. So, the Russians to come over here and meet with Trump, shows good faith, in my opinion. And at the same time, the Americans have not shown good faith at all in the Syrian theater. So for Donald Trump to say some things about how we're operating to take out, quote-unquote, ISIS, which, by the way, the Americans and their allies were extreme architects of ISIS.
Right.
And,
that's a whole other story, that
that's
one.
That's a whole other story. So for somebody to jump on the bandwagon and say, he's done the worst thing, he's sharing intelligence. No, he really didn't share anything the Russians didn't already know. The Russians have fantastic intelligence. They know more about what's going on in Syria than the average intelligence guy in the American intelligence community, because it's so compartmentalized. People in the American intelligence community don't know what's going on in the room next door most of the time, and the guy next door is not supposed to share that information with the guy across the hall at the NSA. So
then they've got actual competition on the ground too. I mean, we've discussed here with Mark Sloboda and others the actual shooting war that takes place between, say, the Pentagon's backed group in Syria and Langley's backed group in Syria, where they're at war with each other.
Sure, absolutely. So the same sort of political bias that exists in the political realm in the United States also exists in the military and the intelligence realms. So those infightings between the political ideology and the actual facts versus how they're going to spin the story, just like the news media, happens at contractor level, happens at military levels. Obviously, Booz Allen Hamilton's a big player in that when it comes to the intelligence side, which is, by the way, another, Israeli Hezbollah infiltrated system. I mean, we're talking about Dov Zakheim being at the head of, he was a senior vice president, for God's sakes, that Booz Allen Hamilton. This is one of the perpetrators of 9/11. So this is a really disgusting historical problem that's been going on for quite some time. And so I feel like, there's not a lot of people who understand the inside of what's actually happening here. So I think that if you take a closer look at what's going on with the intelligence community and how they're actually sharing the information, they're sharing the information from a very biased perspective. The media does the same thing. So that's why you see, you know, individuals staying loyal, not really to their politicians, but staying loyal to their ideology, whether it's left wing, right wing, religious, whether it's obviously has something to do with their upbringing, their indoctrination. And they believe they're doing the right thing. Don't get me wrong. There's no surreptitiousness about this. It's like joining a team. It's like being an alumni from a college. They're supporting their team, and they're being loyal to their team, and they're not being loyal to the Constitution. And that's what's happened here, is the Constitution's just been bastardized over the last 100, 150 years.
Yeah, I'm looking through some of the media portrayals here of you know, you're talking about the institutional self-interests, basically, that are, you know, being mangled and wrestled through and all that.
All the time.
And you've got here, this is a pronouncement on the Washington Post's opinion page. This is the title. McMaster and Tillerson are complicit in Trump's dishonesty, so must they resign? I mean, it's a statement of fact, at the, you know, an alleged fact in the title that McMaster and Tillerson, first, that Trump is being dishonest, and that McMaster and Tillerson are being complicit in that dishonesty. And then you look at the story, quote unquote, and there's absolutely nothing to support it. And I've noticed this phenomenon in the media. It's something that I've never seen before. And you know, we've seen a lot growing up in this country, okay? I remember, you know, I was reading the newspaper when I was 5 years old in 1959, 1960. I remember the 1960 presidential election. I remember some of the campaign songs and things that people were, you know, spitting out. I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. I remember the coverage of all of this stuff from, you know, growing up. And I've never seen anything like what you now see. Trump falsely accuses so-and-so of this. Trump lies about that. In other words, in the headline, there's been some kind of a determination of, you know, what, like a conclusion of facts that often are not even in the story. That is, I mean, what used to be editorializing is now reportage. And the editorializing is like off the charts compared to what editorializing used to be. It's like a quantum leap in the vector between, you know, reporting facts and, you know, what's actually printed and, you know, spit out on television and elsewhere. So this is like sort of a manifestation, a public manifestation of the conflicts that you're talking about. There must be some, and we know that there's, some has been revealed, these institutional relationships between Intel and media, the people are placed here, there's a direct control like BBG and all of that of, you know, some of the official propaganda arms. But the relationship, you know, that developed through being embedded in all these things that were more recent phenomena than the reportage in the 60s. To where now, like I said, you've got, you know, Trump falsely accuses so-and-so of this, that, or the other thing as a headline. Well, what the hell is, what goes on a daily basis, like in Langley or, you know, wherever this stuff gets cooked up and fed to us?
Well, I think what's happened here is that we see an escalation of communications that is a result in, you know, exposing a lot of things that weren't exposed in the past. You know, when you had in the past, you had a much more controlled and eloquent media environment. You know, if you go back and look at William F. Buckley and others, you know, that were in the news in the 60s, like you mentioned, these individuals, you know, were far more educated, were obviously closer to the cusp of the elite, were you know, very more eloquent. You know, it wasn't like the Springer style knee-jerk reactions that we're seeing right now. Right. And I think part of that is because of the The exposure of the dishonesty. Obviously, there's dishonesty on Donald Trump's side as well as Obama, and you know, so on and so forth. And this dishonesty and this accusations of dishonesty is becoming more prevalent because you know there's more avenues in which people have access to in order to not only express their opinion about things, but also expose information. You know, like WikiLeaks and the Podesta emails and these types of things would have never come out in the past. You know, they would have easily been covered up without the advent of being able to share information openly. So I think that, you know, it would have happened in the past, you know, had people had access not only to the information, but also to the channels in which to broadcast. I think all we're seeing now is that there's just a larger tsunami of information available, and that and that information is also associated with a tremendous development in communications where that's also able to be shared. And I think it's overwhelming for the average person because, you know, obviously you have to, you know, sift through a much larger bale to find the needle in the haystack.
Right. Right.
And that haystack's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and people, you know, are basically choosing a piece of stack to side with. And the fact is that nobody ever sees the needle.
And finally, Scott, I just want to baseline this story about Trump to the reality. If, in fact, Trump conveyed some secret in whatever information he conveyed. I mean, apparently what he did was say, look, you know, there's this new way of blowing up laptops that these guys are, you know, playing with, and you should be careful because they'll blow up airplanes by blowing up laptops or whatever, that somehow something was revealed there. He can do that, can't he? Isn't the president allowed to share whatever information he has or she has?
Yeah, especially when you're talking about counterterrorism. I mean, that's an area that they've been sharing information broadly, not only through the Five Eyes relationships, but also outside of it with other nations. So if that's the information that you're speaking of, that's absolutely inconsequential in my perspective. At the same time, obviously, the Russians, if you don't think the Russians have anybody embedded in the intelligence community in the United States that didn't already know that, then you're a fool. Israeli Hezbollah is in there. You've got the Israelis who share information very freely, like Jonathan Pollard, with the Russians. So if you think the Russians are blind to American intelligence and that Donald Trump knows more than the Russians already knew, you're a fool. I mean, the Russians know more than you could even imagine, just like the Americans know more than you can imagine about Russia. Americans have been working very diligently to place people in the right places in Russia and this vice versa. So this is not, mind mentality around these inconsequential events is really, once again, like I said, a knee-jerk reaction. It's the left-wing media doing the same thing the right-wing media did to Obama and basically playing the left and right paradigm, you know, like a fine-tuned instrument. And unfortunately, the Americans, you know, jump into their respective bandwagons and act like fools.
Yeah, that's for sure. Scott, thank you very much. A pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.